In a week that saw Banksy confirm his signature on Reading's second most famous cultural landmark, two more wins on the bounce confirmed a solid return to form for the first. After a single goal beating a Blackburn in midweek, the Royals hammered three past 10-man Sheffield Wednesday and a hugely satisfying Saturday afternoon of football. Welcome to episode 256 of the Tireless Den podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me this evening to talk about two fabulous wins for the Royals are two of the Tireless Den's finest Reading minds. Firstly, Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Feeling a bit nostalgic given that today is the year anniversary of our game at Birmingham City, the last kind of game of a proper normality, really. So a little bit nostalgic because of that, but obviously great to have some wins to chew over.
Yeah, who I suppose in a way, who would have said, obviously, you know, the fact that would be the last fans of normality for a year and plus. But I suppose who would have told you that afternoon that Reading would be fifth in the table and cruising into a playoff position, maybe wouldn't have believed you in that. And Will Jones also joining us this evening. How are you, mate?
Good, thank you, Mark. And I was expecting Simeon to mention that. And I'd say that for me, that one change has been in since the pandemic is that Reading has sort of come back into my life, and I'm watching, you know, nearly every game. And this time last year, that certainly wasn't the case. So one positive, especially when they've won of three on the bounce.
Yeah, you're certainly not alone in thinking that, which is, you know, a nice thing at the very least that's coincided, I suppose. Let's go on into the recap then and talk about that Sheffield Wednesday game first before the Blackburn game. But before we do that, as ever, a big thank you to our Patreon subscribers and ZCZ Films, our sponsor. And as I say, we have won two games this week. Let's talk about the first in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So I didn't realise that going into this game, we'd only won one of our last eight versus Sheffield Wednesday, which has surprised me in a way, especially, you know, perhaps maybe not in terms of the earlier season encounter with Wednesday, which was not, certainly didn't go quite as our way as much as we thought. And memories of that reverse fixture and all of the refereeing decisions and everything were dragged right back up quite early on in this game. Should mention that Sheffield Wednesday hit the bar actually before Reading went and opened the scoring, but a bit of a mistake from the Sheffield Wednesday man, George Pussas, breaking free. Maybe a sense that he was waiting on the contact, but either way, I think he's maybe just about to open himself up to shoot. And he went down, definite red card, I think. I did enjoy the Hulk-esque shirt rip by the Sheffield Wednesday man Borna as he'd realised the mistake, and he started walking off with the red card. And Sim, I suppose the first thing to talk about with this is that George Puskas in the last week has really emerged back into our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a remarkably quick return to action for him. You'd be kind of not hugely surprised if he came in and just took a little bit of time to get back up to speed. Maybe he kind of didn't have that form at the beginning, but he's been a really big asset in the last two games. And you look at, say, this game in comparison to the reverse fixture. In this one, Puskas was the guy running in behind. We didn't really have that in the reverse fixture, which is why we didn't break him down properly. We had a lot of chances, we had a lot of possession, but couldn't do it. But then you look at the impact of George Puskas being able to just charge through the middle of a defence like that with that kind of single-minded focus on getting at the goal. And yeah, he may have been kind of waiting for the contact or going for the finish or whatever, but just having someone with that kind of mentality and that presence to play off Zhao really gave us an extra edge.
Yeah, and Zhao isn't the type of forward who does, you know, as you say, that arrow-like approach towards goal. Zhao will kind of move it around a little bit and try and trick his way around defenders, which he does really well. But Puskas, you know, I think the less touches he produces in runs, maybe the better he is in a way. And Will, when Puskas went down and, you know, penalty and everything, I thought, well, you know what, the Zhao taking penalty woes won't matter because Puskas will take it. He's the natural option. But it was Michael Olise who stepped up, and got to say, it was a really decent finish.
It was, and I think if Puskas hadn't been starting, then Olise would have been my choice to go for it. But I was a bit surprised because actually, I don't think Puskas has missed a penalty in Reading colours. And actually, unlike Zhao, takes proper penalties. But it was a good one. And you know, Olise had another sort of game where he was, you know, just the skills and the And I think what stepped up, what Elise, the sign that he's really growing as a player through the season, is we're starting to see some his range of passing. I mean, the first month or two, it was about his sort of dribbling and, you know, the assists and goals, but it's the passing now that's really coming out. And it's a joy to watch. And it's really been really nice to see Puskás come in, because I was one of those fans from his first season who was a bit sceptical. I mean, his goal scoring record was actually pretty decent, but there was a lot of games you'd sort of, you know, I'd watch and just didn't really do anything. But you know, the two games this week, he's been really effective, working hard. He still moves. If you sort of compare him to Elise, who can sort of dance around, or Rosario, dance around a bit like a ballerina, he moves in very straight lines and sort of really, really thoughtful in his purposes. But it's a real sort of bonus to have him back. And you do think that if we get Mate and Swift back, and Rosario as well, and actually the injury list is really quite long at the moment, but it just shows you that we've got options. And to have that thing of being able to play two players up front, and it's nice to be able to take Zhao off and rest him, because despite his recent Baron patch, he's still the most important player, I think, or at least one of the three most important players in the squad.
Yeah, well, I guess it takes all sorts, doesn't it? And as you say, Puskás isn't similar to Elise and Zhao. I mean, we actually have quite a few players who are a bit more on that spectrum of as you say, perhaps a bit lighter touch and everything like that. And you do need occasionally a bit more of a battering ram approach, or at the very least, you need to make the opposition think about having that and how they're going to deal with that. Talk about the second goal then. Lucas Zhao, his first open play goal in 8 games. Just a really lovely move. Bringing it through the centre, out to the right hand side. As it was one of the ones where as you're watching it, it's almost like you're playing a PlayStation, because everything just makes sense. You say, get it into him. Okay, now get it over to Yadam. Okay, now get it back to Zhao. Okay, now finish. Like, and it just works so nicely into the satisfaction of that coming off. And I suppose we can add in the satisfaction of the third goal as well. Yadam getting forward again. Really nice play by Sonny and Luca, actually, who had come off the bench. And Sim, this is probably, I mean, certainly for the last few weeks, but probably since the Bournemouth game, I would say that certainly for a 45-minute period of just really enjoyable football.
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually looked convincing going forwards in terms of breaking down a team that wants to sit back and make things difficult for us. Obviously, it's going to be that bit easier when it's a team that's so badly out of form and a team that's down to 10 men, but still the task is there for us to take the game to them and come up with ideas on how to unlock that defence. And when you've got people with the real kind of creativity and the ballerina movement, like you say, of Elise, and you've got Yeardom overlapping, it really gives you different kinds of threat to pose to the opposition. They don't know who to pick up, basically. And you saw that in the move for the second goal, where you've got, I think, Tom McIntyre involved at the start, and then really good footwork from Elise. Yeardom making that overlapping run is so crucial, because sometimes we've played in the past someone like Tom Holmes at right back, and he's not got that mentality to really kind of overlap, get into the box and make that kind of penetrative run. But when you do have Yeardom on the overlap, getting in there, it just gives you that bit more penetration and that ability to get in behind the defence. And it looks like an easy finish for Lucas Zhao, but the fact that we're able to open them up and create the space with clever movement from Elise, clever movement from Yeardom, it makes a goal like that look so easy. And obviously from Zhao, it's a great thing to get another open play goal for the first time in a little while.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, just on the kind of Yeardom, because, you know, Yeardom versus Tom Holmes has been a bit of a debate amongst the fans in the last few weeks. And I think Yeardom's just our best all-round right-back. Tom Holmes is a very good right-back, certainly defensively. Estevez can come forward and can move the ball, certainly in that middle third, really well. But I think Yeardom's just the best option in terms of doing all of them. And funnily enough, I was going to make this point because of the new system that we saw. We saw like a 4-2-2 with effectively had wingers against Blackburn. This one was more of a diamond system, a bit of a flexi 4-4-2. I wouldn't say, other than kind of McIntyre being the central pivot, I suppose, I wouldn't say that Laurent, Semedo and Lise really had strict positions they had to be in. So a bit of a flexible situation, which I think it worked really well. And I was going to say that with McIntyre in at central mid, again, really good performance, so calm on the ball. Tom Holmes was in at centre-back with Michael Morrison out. McIntyre and Holmes in particular have really benefited from the lack of squad options effectively we've had this year in certain positions. Because, you know, with all due respect to Tom McIntyre, we weren't expecting him to play centre mid this year. And yet, because of injuries and we haven't got a massive squad, it's kind of just been a natural fit and it's just worked really well. And Will, in terms of the system, this is something that you wouldn't really necessarily find any fault with it.
No, I thought it worked quite well. And Omar Richards has probably had two of his best games this season in the last two ones. And with Yeodomia really pushing forward. And I saw an average map of the average positions, the players, and they are really far forward. I thought Josh Laurent put in a good shift. He's been a bit quieter this week, but actually was asked to do something different. He was sort of playing where Rosario would normally play, and he's right-footed. So to ask him to sort of play on the left a bit further forward, but it was still a useful performance. I was really impressed by McIntyre, and we have to sort of put a bit of a caveat on saying Sheffield Wednesday are a terrible side and are going down, and we're down to 10 men. But, McIntyre looks like a midfielder. He didn't look like a centre-back playing there. And I'm trying to think of all the centre-backs I've watched in my time of being a Reading fan. And their centre-back. I can't say imagine, A.D. Williams, for example, playing in central midfield, or Inge Maarssen or Sonko playing in it. So it's a real sort of credit to McIntyre that he looked so comfortable on the ball, as does Holmes. And it really sort of shows, the academy is, hopefully, it's starting sort of to step up, and the quality of players that are coming out, is stepping up. But the system, as you sort of go back to the question, it worked well, and it just provides that flexibility. If we can get those players back, we really do have options now, and that's quite exciting for the last run of the season.
Yeah, Sim, I suppose for the last word on this game is that, as Will mentioned there, Omar Richards, whether it is the system or just his confidence that has come through, obviously in the last couple of weeks, it's been not announced by the clubs, but it's been effectively announced in like the media that the talks between himself and Bayern Munich are now complete, and that the move is going to go ahead, and that he's going to leave at the end of the season to go to what is the best team in football, basically, which is, I suppose in future podcasts, we'll kind of break this down as the club and the decision and everything like that. But for now, as a player, in terms of his form, this is the best Omar Richards we've seen in a long time. But basically, it's the best Omar Richards we've seen ever. And the confidence that he's shown in all aspects of the game, he was vital in winning the ball back for the goal against Blackburn. Just bringing all elements together was, I think, in the last week, he's been outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks very much like a settled, focused Richards who obviously hasn't been announced yet by the club, but you'd think that if the deal is fully done, then it just gives him a little bit of closure on the deal, and he's not kind of having to think, am I going to end up at Bayern at the end of the season, am I not going to? And when it kind of drags on a little bit, you would understandably expect the player to kind of be a little bit uneasy, and for it to affect their form, basically. But if he is in the position now where he can say, I know what my future is, he can just focus on playing well for Reading. And obviously it's in his interest to play as well for Reading as he can, because the better he does with Reading, the more likely he is to get into the Bayern team next season. And obviously it's really kind of paid off in the last two games, and hopefully he can really kind of kick on and continue to do that. And the 4-4-2 system, the diamond that he was on the left of, really kind of suits him, because it gives him so much room to get forwards on the left, whether it's Laurent coming in as he did this week, or Ajari on that side. It gives him so much license to get forward, and hopefully we can see a bit more kind of his attacking side in the next couple of weeks.
I think also the formation, because it has that flexibility to it, teams are never going to double up on a left back like out of possession because he's too deep. But when he's on the ball, at least they can drop in, Laurent can drop in, Zhao can drop in. He's got options around him. He's rarely isolated. And even if he does find himself on his own, he's got that strength and nous to find his way out of it. So, as I say, we'll break down all aspects of the deal. And obviously it is hugely disappointing that he's going to the end of the season, but he just appears to have that confidence of a man who perhaps knows his future is elsewhere and onto good things, and best of luck to him, I suppose. But we'll come to that more at the end of the season. Blackburn, then, a quick word over this, Will. I suppose, in a way, just a gradual step up in terms of performance. Just after the Rotherham game, coming back against a team that were in dire straits, actually won on the weekend, I think, and that, you know, they weren't bad, Blackburn, certainly not as bad as Sheffield Wednesday, but to get a goal, kind of making the most of a bit of an error, and then just kind of seeing it through, I suppose it's more of a joining the dots victory, isn't it, up to the better performances.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was a little bit worried, as I'm sure everyone was, after losing to Wickham and four defeats in five. And if you'd said after that game that we'd win three games in a row with three clean sheets, you'd take that. My one thing would be that, you know, I would like to have seen us stuck a few more goals past Sheffield Wednesday, but sort of no complaints for the week. And the win over Blackburn, I thought, you know, Puskás was superb in the first 45 minutes. We maybe didn't sort of step it up in the second half, but it was just about getting the win. And, you know, it's not to be sniffed at, just sort of grinding out wins, especially again with the amount of injuries that we do have in the squad. And we shouldn't forget that.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? And we have got a week off now, which is very important, before the Forest game. We'll talk about in a bit. I'll ask both of you then, I noticed that George Puskás, in his Sky Sports interview after the Blackburn game, said, oh, we want to do bigger things. And I suppose with this kind of run, and you look at, you know, Brentford have dropped some games, Swansea and Watford have dropped a couple of games, they both dropped a game last weekend. Is there, you know, 6 points off second? Obviously, Swansea, if they win both their games in hand, then I think that becomes 11 points. And if Brentford win their game in hand, then we'll be 6 points off of them. It just feels like second is lingering there. Probably with 11 games to go, you couldn't rule it out if we were to go on a huge run. But I suppose it's whether we believe we can go on that huge run.
It's not impossible, but you look at the last couple of weeks and I think it kind of proves why we're not going to get top two. Yes, we're capable of going on a run of three games, but of three wins rather, but if we're also going to lose to Wickham and lose to Millwall as well. And remember that if we'd beaten both those teams, we'd be right up there with an extra 6 points. And those are games that were very winnable. And we were essentially had those 3 points in our hand on both occasions. And for us to kind of drop points in those matches, and yes, we can kind of claw it back with another win. It's just not consistent enough to get into the top two. And it is going to be fine margins going up against Watford, Brentford, Swansea, and I just don't think we're going to have enough in the end.
No, I agree. I will say, though, that we were probably... I'd love to compare the table now to where we were in 11-12. I think we're a bit further back than we were then, and certainly the first-place team weren't as far forward, but we are... I think it's in the second and third weekends from the end of the season we go to Norwich and then host Swansea. So if we're going to do it, maybe it'll be those games, but... I suppose, Will, we have to look over our shoulders. Well, Barnsley won again on the weekend. I mean, they've not played brilliant teams in the last few weeks, but then there are a lot of pretty average teams in Championship. You've still got to beat them, haven't you? Bournemouth have continued to sort of slide. We've now got a four-point gap to the playoff, you know, boundary, which is, I suppose, it's really nice, isn't it? And that does give us a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah, but it makes you feel a little bit more comfortable. But I'm certainly looking at Barnsley, Bournemouth and Cardiff, and I'm far more concerned about them. I think, you know, as Sim said, I think automatic is too much, really. We really would have to go on a Brian McDermott-esque star winning run. But, I mean, Cardiff haven't lost under Mick McCarthy. Barnsley, I think, is it one of five or six games in a row now. I mean, the only hope there is they've got within touching distance of us after doing amazing form, and can they keep it up? And I've got a sort of nasty sort of suspicion with Bournemouth that that they might sneak in. And in the last few years, that, you know, it's been growing a bit of a tendency in the Championship, and we're seeing it this one year with Norwich and Watford, that the relegated teams aren't actually that great, but just because of their greater resources, they just have enough. And Bournemouth still do have a lot of quality. So, you know, if they get in the playoffs, they'd certainly be a threat. But I thought for quite a while that Reading are one of the top six teams in the league, but we're not one of the top two.
Yeah, it's a nice way of putting it. I think, I mean, Cardiff... Well, they should have lost on, I think it's Friday night they're playing, thanks to a missed penalty. They managed to get away with it, but fair enough. I agree with you on Bournemouth. There's still 11 games to go. There is that danger that if they win the last four games of the season and get in the playoffs and squeeze in or whatever, then that's enough of a confidence boost for them to be, you know, in top form. And if they're in top form, the players they've got, that's mighty dangerous for a team like Reading in the playoffs. And we'll have to see how we fall in it. But let's hear from Veljko Paunović now before we go into the mailbag. The Reading boss actually maybe displaying that he definitely listens to this podcast, as my constant mentions of how many times we've scored in both halves of the last few games were kind of brought up in his quote. So let's listen to those now.
I'm very happy because of the team. Team's effort, everyone on the field executed the plan perfectly. I think it wasn't easy at the beginning. We were very consistent with the tempo and speed of the game. We kept the ball, we moved the ball side to side, creating good opportunities to attack. And then in one of the actions, actually without a ball, when we applied a good pressure, we had a right turnover and got the penalty kick, which was executed properly, and something that we also broke down, right? The bad luck we had on the penalty kick. So now that's away and behind us. Another important thing that we broke down is the fact that we didn't score for a long time in the second half. That happened today, which again, second half was a result, a good second half was a result of our patience, maturity in the game, and approach, a consistent approach towards bringing the ball in the final third and looking to attack their flanks. And I think that worked very well.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Okay, so let's get on with the mailbag then. If you want to get involved, the Facebook and Twitter and also the email, thetilehurstend@gmail.com is the place to go to fire off your thoughts. Waldemar Janizak has done that with centre-half, left-back, ball-playing, defensive midfielder. Could we have something really special on our hands with Tom McIntyre? I mean really special, like Omar Richards. It made me laugh, actually, Will, you're saying about the centre-halves that can play midfield. I completely agree, and I thought maybe only Liam Moore could potentially fit into that sort of role. But in terms of McIntyre, Sim, I'll ask you this, because we were quite impressed by the free kick that he stood over in the first half and actually pinged in a really nice effort. And Will had alluded to it earlier in the show that the Academy prospects, they've been told for years about playing out from the back and everything like that. And it was really, it goes back to Eamon Dolan, the sort of legacy that he has, that this is how the Academy players are meant to play. And I suppose when they were talking about that in, 2016, we probably thought, oh, yeah, well, when's that going to finally come to fruit? I suppose in the last couple of years, it actually has.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same with Tom Holmes as well. The technical ability is really there, and they're really well-rounded players. And the fact that you can kind of drop Tom McIntyre into a couple of different positions, and he's got the ability to play in all of them and the awareness to do it. Tom Holmes as well, he could probably do a good job in midfield as well. And obviously filled in very effectively as a right back, not a specialist, but still done a good job in there. And it does show just how much we've improved our individual ability coming through the academy. And I guess even Michael Elise as well, the fact that he's played as a winger, as a deep midfielder, as a 10, anywhere, it's really a big kind of testament to how well the academy's come on in the last few years.
Yeah, and we had Tetek and Femi Aziz come off the bench on the weekend, which was Femi Aziz's debut as well. I think it's probably, we were talking on the Tyler Send Facebook chat after this game and saying, you know, what does it really mean? Is this kind of Paunović not having the resources? Is he kind of doing a bit token gesture? It's difficult to say, really. And I suppose a lot of young players, when they do come through, are kind of, you know, the circumstances have to be right. We've seen players like Mikel Antonio fallen by the wayside at Reading because the circumstances weren't right for young players to come through and be given the opportunity. So we're having that now. And yeah, Tom McIntyre is someone that I suppose this links into the next question. And Niall saying, morning all, given how we are getting on with top players out, does that mean Paulo has a selection headache when everyone is fit again, or have the current crop done enough to keep their places? Pedro adding, do you guys think we should go one or two up against Forest? I mean, for selection and formation, everything, I don't think we can change from the Sheffield Wednesday team because, you know, taking McIntyre out, I suppose, if Rinomoto or Swift to fit, I'd probably take Semedo out first. But even then, he had a pretty decent game against Sheffield Wednesday, had a, you know, decent week. In terms of one or two up front, I think we'd have to stick with the same formation. So really, what would actually be, if everyone gets fit for the Forest game, Will, we've just got to, that would just mean we've got a good bench.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at we were playing Forest, then Birmingham, and then QPR, and that's three games in 8 days. So the ability to sort of do a bit of rotation is hugely valuable. And, you know, we can use five subs this season as well. So that also gives them a bit of a run out. I think if you're looking at that team we played yesterday, then if Jarre is fit, then you're probably right about Semedo. It'd be tough on McIntyre, but you know, I would still pick Laurent over McIntyre in that holding midfield position. So if Jarre is back, it might be, you know, that Jarre comes in for McIntyre if he keeps in Semedo, and then Rinomoto has been really good as well this season. I mean, you can just keep saying that expression about everyone really this season. There isn't anyone I really look at and think they could do a little bit more. And then when John Swift came back for a short while before getting injured again, I mean, he looked class as well. So it's quite exciting. And it's nice actually to have we're thinking, who can you start? And it's a proper debate. And we're not, you know, Mate hasn't been mentioned since about November, but you know, don't forget his goal threat as well.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Ben Greenwood tweeted us in saying, if Mate's fit, do you play him, Zhao and Puskas? Sounds like a pretty formidable attack. Think Zhao has suffered from a little fatigue, but also being a double or even triple marked man, Puskas has relieved some of that. Now Mate could give defenders even more to think about. And we'll throw in as well Eddie Call's question saying, stick or twist with the diamond, what would this formation look like with Swift, Ajari, and Mate and Elise all available? And I suppose this is the thing, Sim, is that, as I mentioned, the bench can do with a bit of a bolster. Paunovic has been criticised for not going to his bench much in poor performances this season. I think that is largely down to the lack of quality he perceives to be on it. So that would kind of fix that. But I don't know. I think for the Forest game, I think you just keep it as it is. And I don't think Ajaria... Swift was very decent before he got injured again, but I don't think Ajaria was really decent. He was playing all right, but I don't think he warrants an immediate return to the team. And I'd probably say the same about Mate. So I don't know what you think about, you know, changing formation or personnel.
I think just kind of looking back to the Wednesday game, I'd be a little bit hesitant to kind of draw too much from the individual performances there, given just how bad Sheffield Wednesday were. And when it comes to, say, Tom McIntyre in the holding role, yes, he did a good role. He did a good job in that match, but he's going to get tested a lot more in another game against better opposition. And maybe it would be wise to bring Laurent back into that position and maybe bring Rinomoto in. Looking at, say, someone like Mate, I wouldn't be trying to fit him, Puskas and Zhao in the same team at the same time, because essentially they're trying to play the same part of the pitch, basically, that neither of them are kind of a really out-and-out winger who's going to stretch the play. Obviously, that wouldn't really work in a diamond anyway, but leaving one on the bench and just having another kind of option to shake things up is no bad thing at all. And obviously, when you got Ajari to come back in as well, it gives you another really good option in the midfield. And yeah, I think overall, it kind of, the options we have coming back in, it really allows us to strengthen that particular system and obviously tweak it throughout the game. Because yeah, I guess going back to scoring in both halves, sometimes we've just not been able to bring on a quality substitute in the second half and really give us some more momentum going forwards. But when you do have that quality on the bench, hopefully that's something we can start to see a little bit more of, us finishing strongly with a good sub.
Yeah, there is that sense that a team that was going to win the championship this season. You know, as we've seen in the past, those Reading teams that they would have put five or six past that Sheffield Wednesday team. And that links into Jack Killick's question saying, how much do you put the last three wins down to Reading being good or the fact the opposition have been poor? Well, I mean, as you just said, let's make no bones about the fact that Sheffield Wednesday were playing with 10 men for the best part of an hour. And, you know, they did, as I said at the top of the show, they did hit the bar. They weren't terrible before then. After then and after the first goal, certainly in the second half, Reading, actually in the first half as well, Reading were well on top. Sheffield Wednesday, I didn't know about them going down, really. I guess 7 points away, that does kind of look pretty difficult. But, you know, it's the championship. I wouldn't want to rule these things out. In terms of Blackburn, they're on a bad run. Weren't terrible, but just didn't have that final killer ball in the attack, I suppose. But Rotherham, I'd say, played pretty well. I think their position in the league is perhaps a little bit harsh, given their play. And I think this is the thing that we find, Will, in these teams, that there are a lot of well-organised teams. There are a lot of teams that will give a bit and make life difficult for you. But with Reading having a decent defence, we kind of rebuffed them relatively comfortably. And then that makes the opposition, I suppose, look worse than maybe they are.
Yeah, I mean, we are a better team than those ones, you know, just the tables that shows it and the way the game pans out. But, you know, we should remember that the Wickham game really isn't that long ago. And I think we all kind of looked at that and thought, well, surely that should be 3 points we got. And, you know, we were terrible that game. Even, you know, when we did finally get in a chance, we mucked that up. You know, don't take it for granted. And so much of this season, often the championship, when you play teams at the wrong time, you know, you hit a team that are in form. When we played QPR, they were in absolute dreadful form. And we, you know, finished the game with Semedo up front. But we nicked the win. If we played QPR around now, when they were sort of, I think they just recently won sort of four or five in a row, it'd be completely different. And it's been the same for ourselves. You know, we've been in form, we've had injuries. So it's a bit of a sort of luck when you sometimes play teams. I think you're right about Rotherham. Rotherham have been really hit by the fact that they've had, it's now they've got their second bout of COVID in the squad. So we're playing a bit of catch up. And maybe that's the one thing when we talk, you know, your question earlier, we sort of look at Swansea and Brentford with games to play, and Barnes, they've got one as well. But, you know, there's actually extra games to get tired. So they're not guaranteed 6 points. And it might mean that, you know, it doesn't take too much, as we've seen ourselves at Reading, but you lose two or three in a row and other teams have caught up with you.
No, that's a good point to make. Lawrence writes saying, theoretically, if we had signed Perry NG in the summer, how much of an impact would that have had on Richards this season? With that in mind, would you happily see less signings this summer to let the academy shine, e.g. sign no midfielders to allow Tetek a spot? In terms of the summer, I mean, we are in such a difficult position to judge summer signings, given we actually don't know what league we're going to be in a good way. So I would probably say that... you know, we're going to have to sign players in either scenario, really. But Sim, I suppose in the question, we were linked with a left back over the summer, and Perry NG actually signed for Cardiff in January, and they've done pretty well, I suppose, since then. But we had three left backs last season, and it didn't suit any of them, really. Having won this season slash a couple of centre-backs who can move over, I suppose it has been massive for Omar Richards just to have that consistency.
Yeah, it's just let him focus on his game time, basically, rather than having to kind of come in and out of the side. I think there was a piece in The Athletic that Ollie was quoted in, and someone said in there that he kind of, I think it might have been Mark Bowen, who said that Omar Richards wasn't able to properly kind of concentrate on performing in the team because they kind of come in for a bit and then maybe lose his spot to Blackett or Abita, and just being able to kind of properly focus on first team game time has been really good for him. I think Perry Ung might be a right back, actually. I think he's someone that we've looked at in the summer, and I think he would have been a good signing, actually. I was hoping we'd go for him. He looked like a relatively kind of cheap up and coming player, and for me that would have been essentially an alternative to Thomas Estevez as a kind of a younger right back that we could bring in maybe as a longer term replacement for Yeardom. And but it's a good point about generally kind of how many signings you want to make, because I think in reality we would have wanted to make more, particularly in January, to boost the squad. But obviously it does kind of help younger players getting that bit more kind of game time around the edges. Not regularly, because there's been kind of times when you've thought maybe Pavlovic can give Tetek a bit more game time or another academy debut or whatever, and he's not done it, and he's been a bit more cautious. But it does still kind of open up a few more opportunities. And you compare this to years gone by when we've had a massive squad and players just not able to get an opportunity, younger players not able to get an opportunity, and it looks like a much more kind of lean, healthy squad basically.
Yeah, and the fact I like the fact that Tom Holmes has been moved over to right back, and he's done really well there. Well, yeah, it is about finding ways to fill gaps without having to go out and spend 500 grand on a right back when you have one kind of ready made. And it's brilliant if that right back you sign 500 grand, it's brilliant. But if he's just your reserve, I think that's kind of where you think of David Myler and Dave Edwards, those sort of players that we've signed in the past, and they just weren't. Ultimately weren't better than we talked about Adrian Popper a few weeks ago in regards to Tarik Fosser, and those sort of players do block the pathway of younger players, because you maybe want the younger players filling out the squad and everything. Final question in a mailbag before we go on to news by Sandy Halls, saying, I feel we're still underusing our set pieces. We had 7 corners, many of which failed to beat the first man. If not Olise, then who? Well, Will, I said earlier that Tom McIntyre fired in a pretty decent free kick at one point. I think that perhaps set pieces, this is made, is it more, do we think it's more delivery, or do we think it's more routine? And if you've got a good routine, the delivery takes care of itself. Or maybe is it, if you've got a good delivery, the routine takes care of itself.
It's a bit of both. And there are, I think in recent years, we've started becoming a bit aware that actually there not many goals do come from set pieces, but in some ways it's not the goals, it's creating that momentum and sense of danger. And Reading seems to have a lot of corners that are just very easily cleared. And it's a bit surprising. I mean, that's probably the one aspect that I'd say to the release needs to sort of improve a little bit on his corners. And John Swift's corners aren't great, but his free kicks are better. I mean, Omar Richards has taken corners in the past, so I don't know whether that would be an option. But we're not always the tallest of teams either, so I don't know if that's one. But sometimes they can be quite clever with their free kicks, but corners is something that I don't ever really watch Reading and feel that I don't expect us to score from a corner.
No, there was one corner routine we did against Bournemouth away at the start of the season, and it was really awful. I seem to remember that was a routine that just got played out and just didn't work. Right then, let's go on to News Bites and cover what's been going on around the club this week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Bit of transfer news to mention before we get into News Bites, and that is that Nahum Melvin-Lambert, the academy striker, has signed a new contract and gone on loan to St Patrick's in Ireland. So some good game time there in senior football for him. Let's do the other teams around Reading. Reading women playing on Monday night against Bristol City. The under-23s, they beat Newcastle on Monday with Nevers and Aziz scoring. Nevers scored again on Friday in a 3-1 defeat to Norwich. That interestingly featured Dejan Tetek and Sonny Aluko, both played 45 minutes, as did Femi Aziz, all of which who then came off the bench for the senior side the day after, and Jerry Eldorset also played 90 minutes in that, and then was on the bench the day after that, which I don't think is a brilliant situation to have, because we probably want our subs to be perhaps a little bit fresher than that if called upon. But I suppose as that kind of instruments the or highlights rather the conversation we were just having about the academy players and all that sort of stuff being able to fit in and do a job. The under-18s have not played this week. They're next in action against Crystal Palace on Saturday. So, I mean, that's pretty much it for News Bites for now. So let's go on and talk about another game of football.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Gloriously, we have a week off mercifully, this is. Not that I don't want to watch Reading on Tuesday night, but I think we'll all agree that with the injuries and everything like that and with the busy run, it is nice that Reading can sit back on a three-game winning run and being fifth in the table and just say, you know what, that's that'll do us for the moment. There are a couple, like Swansea play on Tuesday night, Barnsley are playing Derby on Wednesday night, so a couple to keep an eye on in general terms in the Championship. But otherwise, Saturday, March the 13th, 3 p.m, it is Nottingham Forest away for the Royals. And Sim, this is a team that aren't really doing that well. They lost to Watford on Saturday, 1-0 defeat. They didn't get any shots on target. Perhaps would indicate that once again, Reading are going to go into a game as pretty clear favourites.
Yeah, certainly good omen, particularly with the shots on target. I think we didn't concede any shots on target against Wednesday, and we've not conceded any shots on target from inside our own box in, I think, the last three games, which is a really impressive record. And obviously you can keep that up against a team that's kind of suffering from a similar problem next Saturday, then we're going to have a really good opportunity. And what we've seen in the last couple of games is that we've been able to kind of grind out those results and weren't at our very best against Blackburn and Rotherham, obviously better against Sheffield Wednesday, a much worse side. But if we can kind of get that same kind of element to our game through and maybe even get another red card, considering I think we played Sheffield Wednesday and Forest and got back-to-back red cards earlier on in the season. If we can do the same thing this time and get back-to-back red cards in these fixtures, then obviously it makes it a lot easier for us.
Yeah, it's a good point to mention, actually, that Reading versus Forest earlier in the season was, I suppose it was that that glorious day, wasn't it? Was it that first game back with fans was Forest and being able to have the 2-0 win on Sky and yeah, João and Morrison. I suppose that was actually probably one of the highlights of the season so far, and that's got good competition for it. So good omens then, and Will, maybe less good omens if you're hoping to pay a tenner on iFollow and watch a gold fest, because Forest, they may well be without a win in three, and they may well have not scored more than one goal in a game in their last seven, but they've also not conceded more than one goal in a league game since January the 20th. So it's going to be tight.
It will be. They've actually got a better defence than Reading, even though we've got 20 more points than them. They've conceded three goals less than us. But on the other hand, as you said, they've actually only scored 28 goals. So it's going to be a tight one. And, you know, use the cliche, the first goal could be crucial. So, yes, I think you're right. I don't expect it to be a particularly entertaining game. But, you know, That's fine. If we can get the win, then I'm not going to complain if the game's a little bit boring. We just sort of need to get it. And then, you know, hopefully if you sort of get that goal with their lack of a threat and they're a little bit out of form, then we should sort of hold on for the win.
No, I suppose the concern in the reasonably potential scenario that Reading can go 1-0 up, I suppose even against Sheffield Wednesday, there were minor trembles of, oh God, what happens if we go 1-0 up and then blow it? But I suppose that's potentially what I think is going to happen in this game. Talking prediction league, thankfully Westie and Handbags decided to take the hit for us and not jinx Blackburn by saying we're going to beat them. So myself, Ollie and Sim all got wins in that one. In fact, Ollie got 1-0. So he picked up 3 points from that. We all said that we beat Sheffield Wednesday. Thankfully, that didn't jinx it. Nobody said 3-0, however. So a raft of single points then for us all picking up the wins. The standings currently, myself on 25, Handbags 24, Ollie 21, Westie 19, and Sim, you're back on 16. If you can provide an explanation for that, then I'd love to hear it. And then you can follow it up with your prediction for the Forest game.
I think from the last couple of years, I maybe had been gone a bit too optimistic. And now this one, this season, I've responded by going a bit too pessimistic in an attempt to kind of turn my fortunes around. I think I may have had a habit recently of guessing 2-1 wins for Reading. I'm going to guess that this one is going to finish as a 2-0 win for Reading, purely on the basis it's the same score in the last fixture. I take the point in the about Forest not conceding more than one goal very often this calendar year, but I do fancy us to stick a couple of goals past them, considering we have that extra firepower with Puskas and Jao being rested. Hopefully have a few more attacking players back on the bench or in the starting 11 in the next game, and it just feels like we're building up a bit of momentum. I guess the major worry for us, or one of the bigger worries, is having that extra week off. Yes, it's good for getting players back from injury, but maybe it just takes a little bit off the momentum and players focus on a rest rather than building up momentum. It's a good problem to have, but something we need to kind of be aware of.
No, it's a good point. And I'm going to go for a 1-0 win, because when I take the time to find these sort of stats and go through Forest's recent games, I'm wedded to these statistics, and I will take heed from them, such as their bountiful knowledge. So I will go for a 1-0 win. And I think let me put it this way. If Reading play badly and win 1-0 at Nottingham Forest, we should not complain about that, because those stats suggest that Nottingham Forest are a difficult team to beat. They may not be a difficult team to keep out, but to beat them is going to be difficult. So, you know, I think as fans, maybe we should prepare ourselves for a bit of a stodgy game, or a game that isn't quite as satisfying as the 3-0 win against Sheffield Wednesday. And that's fine. And Will, I wonder where you're going to go for a prediction for this one.
I think I agree with you, the 1-0, and I'm going to just go with the positive with saying it with Reading. I was wondering whether to play the sort of devil's advocate and go for Forest, but no, I'll channel the positive thinking.
Brilliant. And that, well, as I say, we'll have the week off then, we'll enjoy that, and then we'll be back for the show next week. Funnily enough, we've got the show next week, and then obviously we'll have Birmingham QPR, as we mentioned, then show after that, and then we've actually got an international break on the horizon, so perhaps Reading won't be too concerned about rotating and everything if the international break's coming up. But I think that's going to be a really good marker for Reading for those three games to get in, and as Will said earlier, very winnable games. Get that in, get the Forest win in, and then we can see where we are after that. And if that, you know, the gap to second place isn't the thing that we really need to be concerned ourselves with at the moment. The gap to seventh, however, is the focus for me at the moment. So that draws to an end this episode. And Sim and Will, thank you very much for popping on with me.
Cheers for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark and Sim.
And we will be back after that Nottingham Forest game, and after, you know, the doldrums of Wickham and scraping wins against the, you know, not against Rotherham and edging Blackburn. We've finally been vindicated for that faith and vindicated for the trust that we showed in this Reading team by pulling off the lovely 3-0 win over Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend. Perhaps diamonds are forever. Come on, you ass.
Yeah. an addict.